UAB Medcast is an ongoing medical education podcast. The UAB Division of Continuing Education designates that each episode of this enduring material is worth a maximum of 0.25 AMA PRA Category 1 credit. To collect credit, please visit uabmedicine.org/medcast and complete the episode's post-test.
Welcome to UAB Medcast, a continuing education podcast for medical professionals. Bringing knowledge to your world, here's Melanie Cole.
Hello, and our topic today is the management of cholangiocarcinoma. My guest is Dr. Jared White. He's the director of UAB Interdisciplinary Liver Tumor Board at UAB Medicine. Dr. White, explain a little bit about cholangiocarcinoma or bile duct cancer and who is at risk.
Yeah, so cholangiocarcinoma is a relatively uncommon malignancy. Typically think it occurs in about 1 to 2 cases out of every 100,000 patients that we see in the United States annually. These patients tend to be in their 60s, 65 or older. Cholangiocarcinoma itself is a malignancy that arises from the epithelium of the cells of the biliary tract. So if we talk about the liver, I think of the liver as a jello mold, if you will, and through that jello mold is the bile ducts and all of the blood vessels. So this particular malignancy arises from the bile ducts themselves, and there's an intrahepatic and an extrahepatic component to that. So you have the bile duct outside the liver, and tumors can present there. You also have the bile ducts within the liver, and these cholangiocarcinomas can present there. These are very similar cancers to probably more commonly understood cancer of the pancreas or pancreatic adenocarcinoma, which tends to also arise from the ductal epithelium.
What's the clinical presentation? And while we're speaking about that, speak a little bit about how important early diagnosis is as being crucial to improve outcome prediction and why staging is such a challenge.
Yeah, so unfortunately, early identification is certainly not the norm, and unfortunately, most patients that present at relatively late stages. Once they have symptoms, these tumors tend to be often small. They're not things that you can feel, or they don't always cause pain. For example, most patients when they present with painless jaundice. And that tends to be an ominous sign, and that's true for both pancreatic cancer as well as cholangiocarcinoma of the liver and bile duct. So painless jaundice may be the first thing that's noticed, and along with that is light-colored stools from obstruction of the biliary tree. If the bile doesn't make it into the intestines, the stool tends to turn what we call clay-colored or light-colored. The urine becomes really dark, and the deposition of the elevated bilirubin within the skin pigment, which causes the jaundice, often causes itching. So those are the most common symptoms. Some patients with really advanced blockage can experience fevers and even symptoms of what we call cholangitis, which would be infection or inflammation of the ducts that lead to fever and chills and a more progressive symptomatology such as nausea and vomiting. And most of these patients tend to present malnourished. They've lost 20 or 30 pounds. And so I think the patient families oftentimes are concerned and scared because they realize this is an ominous presentation when they've lost weight. And a lot of these folks present very chronically appearing.
So, Dr. White, what are some current issues in medical or surgical management? Assess for us the appropriateness of specific treatments that you would use once you detect what's going on.
Yeah, so you mentioned early diagnosis, and I alluded to the fact that most of the time these cholangiocarcinomas present at an advanced stage. The challenge with these tumors are diagnosis, and so typically, when patients present with these symptoms that were mentioned, they get a workup including blood work, basic electrolytes, and liver function panel, and that shows the initial derangements with the elevated bilirubin. Sometimes there's a degree of hepatic dysfunction, so blood coagulation panels may be abnormal. electrolyte and nutrition parameters are all abnormal, and that lends itself to imaging. And so most patients end up either with ultrasound or a combination of ultrasound followed by either CT or MRI, which shows the ominous lesions either in the extrahepatic bile duct. The most common presentation is at the bile duct bifurcation, which is the location where the left and right bile duct from the liver joins up with what's called the common bile duct. And that's a classic cancer known as a Klatskin tumor. Most common presentation, there's also tumors within the liver we call intrahepatic cholangiocarcinoma. They don't always present with jaundice because the biliary tree is not completely obstructed there. Those are more large masses that we see on CT or MRI, for example. And again, when folks present, and which tends to be in advanced, intermediate to advanced stages, if they're having symptoms, a lot of these patients have already metastasized outside the liver. They may have lymph nodes in the abdomen, or even see tumors within the lungs or spine, for example. And then the crucial aspect becomes if they've had, if they presented with jaundice, the initial therapy that must take place is getting the biliary obstruction relieved. And that in and of itself can be challenging, and there's active research into which way is best, whether that's an endoscopic approach, running a camera down the esophagus into the stomach and approaching the bile duct endoscopically, placing a stent, versus using a percutaneous approach and placing what's called a percutaneous cholangiogram or PTC catheter across the bifurcation and down into the duodenum. This allows drainage of the bile, alleviates the jaundice in best case scenarios, and then lends itself to potential treatment options. Treatment options, unfortunately, surgery is often not an option when they present at advanced stages. If they have metastatic disease, if they already have vascular invasion that precludes a safe resection, then surgery in that case is not an option, or at least resection. The other potential surgical option for possible cure for these patients is liver transplant, but this is an area of controversy given the shortage of organs and particularly liver grafts. And again, if they have extrahepatic disease or vascular invasion, they would not be a candidate for a liver transplant. So only very highly selected patients, young, otherwise no comorbidities, would even be considered for liver transplant. And unfortunately, the ones that are considered a lot of times can't, they don't actually make it to transplant because of the pre-transplant treatment algorithm that they must endure, which requires chemotherapy as well as radiation therapy up until the transplant. And so a lot of these patients progress and don't respond. So without surgical options, the options for management include potentially chemotherapy and radiation therapy. But these tumors, owing to the fact that they are rare, the treatment options are also quite limited. You know, breast cancer, colon cancer, things that are a little more common, and lots of research and lots of new chemotherapy regimens are available that we've made, you know, significant advancements in the management of those cancers. For cholangiocarcinoma, the chemotherapy is tends to be a hodgepodge of chemo that's utilized for other cancers like colon cancer, with the hope that they respond. And unfortunately, a relatively small percentage of patients actually get a durable response. These tumors tend to oftentimes progress despite our best efforts with chemo and radiation and so forth. So then the options for management, unfortunately, are palliative in nature, which means basically bypassing the obstruction if it's a central tumor, and trying to alleviate symptoms, jaundice and nausea and vomiting and malnutrition and so forth. So extremely challenging, and really the diagnosis of cholangiocarcinoma is probably the most challenging aspect, in that these aren't often, you know, large masses that you can stick a needle in and get tissue. These tumors grow along the epithelium of the bile ducts a lot of times, and the only way to get a sample is with brushings and, you know, endoscopically or percutaneously trying to get enough cells to make that diagnosis. And I would usually quote probably less than 30 to 40% of the time that they actually can get the diagnosis of cholangio outside of just what it appears to be on radiographs, CTs and MRIs and so forth. So it's one of those cancers that a lot of times, if I'm going in to perform a large resection, I still don't have the diagnosis of cholangio. I just have the suspicion of cholangio, but we keep our fingers crossed that we can actually get the resection performed. And then on final review of the pathology, a lot of times they have enough tissue that they can make that diagnosis.
As it is more rare, not as common, is there current research going on, Dr. White? And wrap it up for us and let other physicians know what you would like them to know about the management of cholangiocarcinoma and when to refer if they are really unsure about this particular type of cancer.
Yeah, so there's certainly lots of active research going on, some of which we're performing right here at UAB. I'm actually involved in a trial with one of our physicians here, Dr. Yoon at UAB, that's trying to collect samples, intraoperative samples that I can provide her in order to try to develop an animal model of cholangiocarcinoma for further studies, including chemotherapeutic and pharmacological agents that might be used. I'm just signing up for a multi-center trial with Washington University in St. Louis to look at liver tumors that have been resected or transplanted that were presumed hepatocellular carcinoma, which we've, I believe, talked about previously, but on final path review came back as mixed tumors, or biphenotypic tumors, we call them, of mixed HCC and cholangio, and trying to look at survival associated with surgery and surgical resection and liver transplantation. So in terms of what the outside physician or the primary care physicians that are seeing these patients, it's absolutely crucial to get them, to these patients are best suited in a academic university or a high volume surgery center where all interventions are at hand, where we have interventional radiology and advanced endoscopists that can help try to get the diagnosis as well as provide the biliary drainage that's necessary, and then allow for our interdisciplinary review of their imaging to determine are these patients surgical resection candidates or not, and if not, we're able to get them plugged into our oncology providers that can offer any potential neoadjuvant or adjuvant therapy for their cholangiocarcinoma. You know, these are annually, I probably resect maybe 10 of these a year compared to other malignancies where I may do, you know, many, many times more than that. But this is the most challenging surgery that I do, even including liver transplant. Liver transplant is technically easier than doing these resections because of the nature of the location of these tumors and the surgical expertise that's required. These patients require extended hepatic resections. They require resection of the entire bile duct and then reconstruction of the bile duct to the intestines in order to provide drainage. And with that, a lot of times I have to perform a major vascular resection, either the portal vein or occasionally the hepatic arteries, in order to even be able to get that tumor out, all the while trying to obtain negative margins. So very, very challenging, even with the best imaging and diagnostic techniques available. These are, again, the most challenging. These are often 6, 7, or 8 hours or more, an all-day operation, which brings about prolonged hospitalization and increased risk of complications such as biliary leaks, and we worry about liver failure from having to do too large of a resection and not leaving enough liver behind, and with that comes symptoms that can plague the patient thereafter. So the reason why the survival of these patients tends to be relatively poor compared to other malignancies, even in the best case scenarios where we're able to resect their tumor, very, very challenging patient population to treat. It's a very humbling malignancy.
Wow, Dr. White, what an interesting topic. Thank you so much for being with us today. A community physician can refer a patient to UAB Medicine by calling the MIST line at 1-800-UAB-MIST. That's 1-800-822-6478. You're listening to UAB Medcast. For more information on resources available at UAB Medicine, you can go to uabmedicine.org/physician. That's uabmedicine.org/physician. This is Melanie Cole. Thanks so much for listening.